It's the evening of November 7th, 1942. In the moonless night, floating in the western Mediterranean, the men of the 1st Ranger Battalion are steaming towards Vichy-held Algeria. The US has been at war for almost a year and is about to make its combat debut against the European Axis in North Africa. The Rangers are under the command of Lieutenant Colonel William Darby and have been aboard three British passenger ferries for 2 weeks. Just part of a 96-ship task force bound for Oran, Algeria, the central prong of Operation Torch, the invasion of Northwest Africa. 50 Rangers from across the battalion had been attached to the British commandos and Canadians during the ill-fated Dieppe raid in August. However, the battalion is yet to undertake its own independent operation. This is their day. The Central Task Force area of operations is centered on the port city of Oran, split into three landing sectors. To the west, X Sector will land a part of the 1st Armored Division's Combat Command B, while Y Sector lands the 26th Regimental Combat Team. At Oran's port, a small and ultimately unsuccessful anti-sabotage mission codenamed Operation Reservist will also be attempted by two armored infantry companies. But the largest force will land at Z Sector to the east. The 3-mile-long beachhead will receive Combat Command B's Task Force Red, as well as the 16th and 18th Regimental Combat Teams, 2/3 of the 1st Infantry Division. The Rangers will be directly supporting the 1st Infantry at Z Sector. Directly overlooking the beach is the city of Arzu. The 19th century colonial settlement is home to a Navy seaplane base and multiple barracks. Its harbor is enclosed by two jetties, with a retractable boom to close it off from the open ocean. The city sits on the harbor's western bank, while the northern bank is occupied mainly by warehouses, docks, and a rail line. The rail separates the docks from the Jebel Sisham Heights overlooking the city. Arzu is defended by colonial troops from the 1st Company of the 16th Tunisian Tirailleur Regiment, as well as one battery of the 68th African Artillery Regiment. In case of invasion, they'd be integrated into a battalion task force with units from throughout the area. But when the Rangers land, the French will be caught undeployed. The 5th Torpedo Flotilla's two torpedo squadrons, Navy units equipped with Latécoère 298 seaplanes, are also stationed on the southern end of the harbor. On the north end, two naval coastal artillery batteries guard the harbor. Two 75mm cannons are manned at Fort de la Pointe, while 500 yards to the northeast, a four-piece 105mm battery sits on the high ground near the blockhouse serving Fort du Nord. These two batteries directly threaten the main landing zones and have to be neutralized. That's where the Rangers come in. Their mission is to seize the key terrain north of the city, destroy the batteries, and hold them until relieved by elements of the 1st Infantry Division. In order to maintain the element of surprise, the Rangers will land in two elements so they can take the objectives in quick succession. Battalion XO Major Herman Damer will lead a task force directly into the harbor and seize Fort de la Pointe. Darby, meanwhile, will lead a larger force in taking out the northern battery. At 12:50 a.m., Task Force Damer, consisting of Able and Baker companies, launch from HMS Royal Scotsman and 8 LCAs. Heavily inspired by the British commandos, the Ranger Battalion is organized so one company can be carried in two British LCA landing craft. But Damer Force is also reinforced with HQ elements and naval gunfire liaisons. These craft reach the harbor at about 1:30 a.m., catching the French unaware. However, the moonless night disorients the pilots, and they enter the harbor incorrectly. They circle around, exit, and re-enter multiple times, hitting the jetties along the way. At some point, the French became suspicious of all the activity and lowered the boom that closed off the harbor. But the craft were eventually able to correct themselves and land west of Fort de la Pointe. The assault on the fort will be handled by Able Company. But first, Baker Company must set up a blocking position to ensure the French in the city can't reinforce the fort. Baker Company's 2nd Platoon, under Lieutenant James Larkin, lands first and immediately establishes a defensive perimeter across the rail line and street intersections. Meanwhile, 1st Platoon under Lieutenant Dean Knudsen set up a line north of the fort, running from the eastern coastline through a cemetery. With this move, the fort is completely isolated. For the defensive effort, Baker Company has been reinforced with 6 M1919 belt-fed MGs from the battalion weapons pool. The Rangers take after the British commandos in having a weapons pool for tailoring their otherwise bare-bones companies to specific missions. Baker's 60mm mortars are also on standby to support the fort assault if necessary. Meanwhile, Able Company under Captain Steve Meade follows up in short order, passing through Baker's lines towards the fort. The whole landing process is complete within 10 minutes. Able moves in two platoons, with Lieutenant Jacob's 1st platoon heading for a grassy embankment on the fort's northwest corner, and Lieutenant Dirks heading for the front gate. As platoon scouts reach the fort, they're challenged by a French sentry, who calls out, "Who are you?" The Rangers answer, "We're your friends," earning safe passage to the fort. As 2nd platoon reaches the front gate, firing can be heard nearby as Frenchmen attempt to flee. It's time to go. 2nd platoon gives the signal to commence the assault, with Jacob's 1st section leading the charge over the embankment. Moving in two squads, 1st platoon breaks through the barbed wire and scales the fort walls. While the alarm is raised, the dazed fort garrison surrenders, with Able securing a bag of 60 prisoners and both howitzers. To signal their success, Major Damer launches a red flare at 2:15 a.m. A U.S. Navy base unit under Captain Walter Ansel, supported by a Royal Navy port party and 12 U.S. Marines, are already at work seizing the crewed vessels in the harbor. Shortly after mission success, Damer starts sending out patrols to secure the oil refinery north of the fort. The southern attack, wrapped up in 35 minutes, remains consistent with today's doctrine for assaulting a strong point. Prior to mission's start, Darby and Damer indirectly reconnoitered the objective via aerial photography and intelligence reports and developed the concept. Baker Company effectively isolated the objective to prevent the enemy reinforcement or withdrawal. Able Company then breached the fort's wire obstacles and exploited their foothold before the enemy could react to clear the objective with no casualties. But, with some Vichy troops in the city now aware of the Rangers' presence, Baker Company begins taking fire from reinforcements reacting to the fort's siren. At this point, Lieutenant Larkin and his runner, Technician 5th Grade Murray Katzen, advance half a mile forward to scout out for snipers. Finding nothing, Larkin returns to the platoon's CP, but Katzen continues. With his Thompson and a spare BAR, he sweeps the French barracks in the city's east. Encountering the French, Katzen pulls the pin on a grenade, and with it held above his head, forces the surrender of 42 Vichy Marines. For this action, he was retroactively awarded the Bronze Star with a V for Valor in 1952. Meanwhile, Derby Force set off from the HMS Ulster Monarch and Royal Ulsterman about 30 minutes after Damer. The task force includes Charlie, Dog, Easy, and Fox companies, plus HQ elements. Dog Company has been detailed as a mortar battery, with 4 81mm mortars for providing indirect fire support on objective. However, Darby Force's journey to shore encounters more problems than Damer. First, one of his LCAs is lowered into the water asymmetrically, flooding it and sending its passengers, radios, and flares for signaling mission success into the drink. The rescue effort and darkness causes a great deal of confusion, requiring the Ulster Monarch to guide the landing craft in itself. Before reaching the beach, one of Fox Company's LCAs runs aground on the rocks 30 yards from shore, leaving most of the platoon stranded. But the rest of the force makes it ashore behind schedule, scaling the 15-foot cliffs overlooking the cove. After subduing a sentry, they set off on a 3-mile road march towards their objective. Following the coastal highway, Darby's force eventually cuts southwest, making the slow trek up the height to the battery's rear. By this point, Damer has already captured Fort de la Pointe. As Darby approaches the objective, he transitions into an attack formation with scouts forward. Dog Company sets up their 81mm mortars at the base of a ravine 500 yards north of the battery. At around 3 a.m., the force runs into layered bands of barbed wire just short of the battery. Just as they're about to break through the final layer, the French artillerymen unleash a hail of fire over Darby's head. Unable to advance, Darby makes a call for fire from Dog Company. A barrage of at least 50 mortar rounds follow. Deadly accurate, they adequately suppress the defenders for the final assault. Once taken, Darby silences the cannons by shoving explosive Bangalore torpedoes down their barrels. With their objective complete, Darby Force moves down the hill to take Fort du Nord. The breach is spearheaded by Easy Company's Edwin Dean, who charges in only to have the drum magazine fall from his Thompson. Luckily, this is only met with laughter from the French, and the Fort Commandant surrenders in his pajamas. As a convalescence home for sick and injured foreign legionnaires, the fort falls with relatively little drama. With all of the 1st Ranger's objectives complete, Darby launches green flares at 4 a.m. to signal mission success. However, this isn't what the Navy was expecting. They were meant to launch red and green flares, followed by a white star cluster to signal the entire mission's completion. However, they lost their white star clusters during the sunken landing craft incident earlier in the morning. With ship-to-shore communications lacking, the Royal Navy sent out a party at 5 a.m. to make contact with Darby and confirm mission success. By then, elements of the 1st Infantry Division had already made it ashore. The 3rd Battalion of the 18th Regimental Combat Team moved on Arzu from the south and encountered Vichy resistance at 4 a.m. They readily captured a barracks, taking 62 prisoners, as well as the naval station at the base of the southern jetty after shelling it with 60mm mortars. The 13 torpedo-armed seaplanes in the harbor were also captured. By mid-morning on the 8th, the city of Arzu was mostly secure, save for some lone snipers and a 75mm howitzer in the hills that sporadically shelled the landing ships that had anchored close offshore. After 2 days spent attached to the 18th RCT containing French forces at St. Cloud, 15 kilometers southwest of Arzu, the Rangers returned to the city on November 10th. There, they assumed rear echelon duties, and Colonel Darby was made the town's mayor. Here they'd remain, training amphibious assaults and urban operations until it was time to move out again in February 1943, this time to Tunisia to conduct raids against the Italians. I'd like to thank our patrons for protecting Battle Order from the whims of the advertisers. Consider joining them at our Patreon link in the description. And if you enjoyed this battle map video, check out this report on the Battle of Dompierre, where a French armored unit supported by US aviation destroyed a German panzer brigade in 1 day. We'll see you over there.